Blog Talk Radio.
Presenting Calm Down, Let's Discuss Rapes, Racism. We Talk Productions is one of the few black-owned social media companies that discuss issues and solutions concerning black folks. Anyone by laptop can call in anytime, 909-265-9215. If you listen by laptop, you can make, if you have any comments or questions, you can dial 909-265-9215. The lineup, as always, is Saturday. Provocative Thought by Carlton Sneed at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Tuesday, we have Black Urban America with me, myself, Kenny Jones. And on Wednesday, we have Shaka Zulu, a.k.a. Shamar Harris, with the Elephant in the Room. Every second Tuesday, we have Miss Anne Dillard, where she did had a great show last Tuesday. Appreciate her doing that with Healthy Relationship. And tonight, every day now, these guys haven't been here in a couple of months because they've been all over the country fighting on different political battlegrounds. But it calm down, let's discuss racism. And with T. Nathan, Melinda, and Reggie. Well, only tonight we only have T. Nathan because his gang is out there at different meetings, pool bar meetings, council meetings in every state.
Yeah. every kind of meeting you could think of, Kenny. Yeah, how you doing tonight?
Electoral meeting and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Planned Parenthood, we everywhere.
Yeah, Planned Parenthood. Really?
Yeah.
And you know what?
Mississippi lost their mind.
A lot of folks got different perception about Planned Parenthood, but that's a topic for another discussion and whatnot.
Maybe
tonight we're going to be talking about the terrorism, right, T. Nathan?
Yeah, we're going to hit on a couple of topics, and that being one of them. But like I said, how are you doing? Last month you had
I start treatment next week. So
okay.
Just got to deal with it, man.
Yeah, that's the story of being black in America. We just got to deal with it. So it just wanted to make sure I put that out there and wishing you the best. And if you need us, call. You know the call, right?
Yes, sir.
But yeah, let's get right into it. My my compadres, my partners in crime are all over the place. We're fighting several different things on several different fronts here. Mississippi legislature just recently passed a 6-month abortion bill. So Melinda's at a meeting and planning some strategy to go with that. The school board here in Gulfport is trying to close a school that's located in a predominantly black neighborhood and community. So Reginald was reading a letter I drafted to the school board and the concerned parents there over that. So, yeah.
So if they close the school, where will these kids go?
See, that's the thing. The superintendent and all, we've been to meetings, and they're giving this flowery rose song about they're not going to fire any teachers and they're going to move all the students to this other school. And it's going to centralize and save money. But see, this is the thing about closing schools in predominantly black communities. It's not just that you're closing the school or the teachers because they're going to move all the teachers and students, but there are support staff at this school. Mm-hmm. There are janitors, there's cafeteria workers, there are people that are incidental to the running of the school that are not going to have a job. And then you're going to leave a building in our community that's vacant. And we've had this happen here before where, you know, they give us this song and dance about someone's going to rent the building or someone's going to take
condos.
The area. Yeah, we get that too, you know. That was one of the things one of the attendees said, that someone can buy the building and turn it into rental property or housing development. The area which the school is located in doesn't need any more housing. They need some jobs. They need industries and things brought into that. So we had this happen at another school here where they closed down 28th Street Elementary School, and the building is still vacant, and it's an eyesore in the community. Mm-hmm. And like I say, we want to teach our community, and we want to talk about how to be educated, be educators, but we want to take the images of black schools out of the community. So these children they have to go somewhere else to be educated. So, yeah, we're fighting that. We're fighting that along with the abortion bill. And we're getting ready for an election here this year in Mississippi for governors, lieutenant governors, secretary of state, attorney general, statewide offices, as well as some local offices that is coming up. And the primaries in August and runoffs in November. So we're getting ready for that, seeing what this blue wave
mm-hmm.
that really turned out to be a rainbow raid that spread across the country last year. We're getting into seeing how is that going to affect Mississippi, because you see how the last Senate race turned out last year, where we managed to put another racist who was celebrating the lynching, going to a lynching, sitting on the front row of a public hanging and dressing in Confederate gear and disparaging voter practices that have been outlawed since the Voters Registration Act. So we put her in office, and Mississippi has one of the largest voting blocks of black people in the country, the largest voting block of black people in the country per state, percentage-wise, and we have yet to elect a state official of color to any statewide office since
Reconstruction.
Yes. Yeah, we have a person of color running for every major state office, I believe, this year. We except probably lieutenant governor. We have a young lady running for governor, Ms. Williams. We have Johnny Dupree, former mayor of Hattiesburg, and he's running mm-hmm. for secretary of state. Yes, we have people of color that have run. As a matter of fact, Johnny Dupree in 2011 ran for governor of this state. So it's not
right.
His first time at the rodeo. But our problem is we need to overcome apathy and a certain sense of non-involvement. But don't get me wrong. I still believe the system was never intended to work for people of color. I don't believe the system is broken. I believe it's working just the way it was intended. But we need to mitigate some of this until we can come up with a way to overthrow the system and devise a system that works for all of us.
Let me ask you something.
Yes.
Do you believe in, some people talk about the black agenda?
Do I believe in it? I believe first you have to tell me what your black agenda is.
You need to have a black agenda when it comes to the national races, the Congress, the legislature, as well as the presidency. Do you think we need to present to the country a black agenda?
Yes, I believe that every candidate running for statewide, because that's one of the things, my question is here. One of our candidates for governor is in Hattiesburg, and I have a friend up there, and one of the questions I sent her was to say, what is the black agenda for Mississippi, especially the areas in the Delta of Mississippi, which is some of the poorest counties in the nation, or right here in Mississippi. So what is your agenda to bring businesses to those areas? That's one of the questions I want to know, because, yes, before we talk about getting a vote, we need to know what these people are talking about and how we are going to be able to work with. Because as long as there's the 13 times racial disparity in wealth in this country, yes, something needs to be done. Something needs to be done. And it needs to be done in a manner that we say you have an agenda to deal with it. If you don't have agenda to deal with it, then all you're doing is paying lip service and not accomplishing what we need you to accomplish. So that is definitely a part of it.
Okay.
So going from there, like I say, there's so much happening in Mississippi right now, because I say Mississippi is the heart of darkness.
Mississippi has a very, very, when you think of Mississippi and you think about the historical context concerning us, Mississippi don't have a good reputation.
Well, let's not get carried away. Georgia doesn't either. But it's those states that formerly formed the Confederacy, where the mentality of suppression and oppression of people of color is almost genetic. And also the response to that oppression is almost genetic. It's like something in the water they drink, and you have to leave and come back to build up an immunity to it. But
hey, there was racism in another fashion in New York City too, brother. Yeah.
Well, it's like I've said, right? Racism is woven into the DNA of this country. I mean, we might think about Mississippi as it's like it's more in your face and more prevalent, but I have not been to any state in this union where racism does not exist. I mean, some of them delude themselves into believing that, oh, we're not like that. And here, I've been to Arizona, I've been to San Francisco and California, I've been to New York, I've been to almost every state in the union. And I tell you that racism is alive and well and kicking, and it has never died. You know, we grew up in that generation where people would tell us to wait and reparate, and racism would die out, you know, with the Strom Thurmonds and the George Wallaces and the Ross Barnett. They said it would die out. No. And a prime example is what happened in Charlottesville with the young men, half my age, that were marching and making slogans saying Jews will not replace us, and basically reliving the racism associated with the Klan and a combination of Nazism. And then 45 talking about they're good people on both sides. No, that's not true. Somehow we've gotten into this, there are multiple sides to every story. No, there's the truth, and then there's everything else. And the truth of the matter is they were racist. And if you don't understand that, then there's something seriously wrong with you. And that's a segue into what happened in Louisiana recently here. We had three black, historically black churches that were burned down within a 10-day period. Churches in Mary Baptist Church, Greater Union Baptist Church, and Mount Pleasant Baptist Church, all within a radius of each other about 10 miles, and all happening within 10 days. And I remember when I first heard this story, and the investigators were saying it was like after 10 days, and the investigators were saying that the church fires are suspicious, but they're not linked, and they hadn't linked them yet. I linked them immediately after I heard the pattern of three churches in this small area being torched. There's not a statistical accident anomaly that covers that. This was intentional. And then you deal with the fact that we are not strangers to burning churches in our community.
That's right.
Going back to Birmingham bombing of a church that resulted in the death of four little girls there. Our churches have always been targeted. That's why it was so amazing to me.
How about the one a couple of years ago in South Carolina?
In South Carolina. Like I say, it amazed me that somewhere along the line.
Was historical. But we talk about recent.
It never stopped. It never stopped. We can go back to the Klan first rising. Our churches were never sacred to them. They were shot at. They were burned. They were bombed. Our churches have never been safe grounds for us. So it surprised me with this a wave of violence against churches in our country that people act surprised. Like, you know, races have never embraced our spirituality or our religion enough to say that our churches were holy ground. So it doesn't surprise me that it's happening. It surprises me that people have the reaction to it, that they do, like this is something that doesn't happen. You know, Notre Dame just burned down yesterday. And people were decrying the defacement and defilement of the church and all that. And I was like, you know, our churches burn every day. Not taking anything away from that, but saying that, if we covered the churches in our own backyard that were burning or being bombed or being shot up with people in them. See, no life was lost at Notre Dame. I'm glad to say no life was lost. It burned. Probably some priceless heirlooms got destroyed, but most of them were saved because there was work being done on it. So, the people of France and the image of Notre Dame to the world, I understand. But in our communities, it is. I'm worried about the churches that have people in them that are being bombed. But see, getting back to that, and when this happened, and they say they wasn't linked, and when I heard it, I said, yes, they are linked. And what do you mean they're not? What do you mean they're not linked? They scream of being linked, and then we find out that the culprit, who they're still not calling a terrorist yet. They talk about hate crimes, and they talk about, you know. But I said one of the most protected classes in this country is a lone white male with mental issues who undertakes an act of terrorism, and that's exactly what this is. This is an act of terrorism. This was not inspired to do hate. This was inspired to cause fear, and fear is what terrorism is all about. But what the media, the outlets, are not calling Hope Matthews, the 21-year-old son of a Lafayette sheriff's deputy, they're not calling him a terrorist. They have blamed it on everything from the music he was listening to. they blame it on he was rattled, things he saw online, listening to music, his mental issues and all that. He was a terrorist. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he committed an act of terrorism. But the thing about it is he's not a person of color. If a person of color would have undertaken this, burned three synagogues or three white churches or anything of that nature, it would be flashing across CNN, Fox News, everywhere, terrorists burns churches. That's what it will be flashing. But this way, because he belongs to this protected class, like I say, white men with mental issues that commit terrorist offenses, even going back to the shooter in the South Carolina churches. Yeah, that was an act of terrorism also. Every mass shooting in the country has been an act of terrorism.
He was treated like a prince.
Yeah, he gets to go to Burger King I remember one time here, I was we just had spring break, and I was thinking about some of the treatment of the students here during spring mm-hmm. break previously. And, yeah, they were treated as public enemy number one. We're here on the Mississippi Gulf Coast in Biloxi Gulfport area, and they have spring break here every year. Just Mississippi Gulf Coast spring break, which is some call it Black spring break, because a lot of historical Black colleges and university students come here,
right.
And they are met with a lot of pushback. They go through these elaborate procedures to corral and to make sure everybody stays safe, as they put it, but. The Gulf Coast of Mississippi has lots of large events, events like cruising the coast, events like scraping the coast. We had the Thunderbirds here a few months ago where traffic, one of the problems here is traffic. Yes, we have Highway 90, and it runs along the beach, 26-mile stretch of beach. And, yes, it gets bagged up when people are doing things that are coming to the beach when you have an extra 60 to 100,000 people here for these events. Yes, traffic is a problem. That's an infrastructure problem. But
right,
the Mississippi Gulf
right.
Coast builds itself as a tourist destination. It builds itself as a tourist destination. So by that virtue of building yourself as a tourist destination, you have to be prepared to deal with the traffic. That's something that the state legislature and the Department of Transportation need to take up about how to extend and how to make Highway 90 larger. Now, barring that, when these events, when spring break comes, the whole atmosphere changes. People want to close up because of traffic. One of the institutions here, Big Play Entertainment. Big Play Entertainment is a place where they have go-karts, they have arcade, and they have all kinds of entertainment geared towards the exact crowd of people that were coming here as far as age-wise. But they
right.
closed, and they cited traffic. They closed because the traffic was too heavy. Traffic has been heavier. I was out and about all doing this event, you know, talking to students and getting their feel for the area. And it was interesting because I do it every year, go out and talk to students, make sure if anything happens, they know how to contact somebody here that will help them. So last year's Little Bootsy was here, and he got maced at the mall and,
mm-hmm.
and since entered a lawsuit against mall properties for what happened, because it was wrong. It was wrong. It was profiling, and it was just because there was a bunch of people of color in the mall, and they were nervous, and they closed up some stores and all this kind of thing. But this is the thing I want you to understand. The arrest rate associated with spring break here on the coast is lower than any of the other major events they have. One of the chief of police was like last year was saying that it was 100% increase in crime or arrests made from the year before. The year before he was talking about there were 3 arrests in general, and the next year was 6 or 7. But yeah, that's 100%.
Hold it now. Sorry about that.
Yeah. No problem. So this is the insidiousness of racism here on the coast. This is April. And we are 59 years. This year marks the 59th year anniversary on April 24th of the wait-in, Bloody Beach, that happened here in 1960. So you deal with that, and it's when I hear people tell these students, why don't y'all go somewhere else where they appreciate you at? Well, no, I'm a taxpayer here on the coast. My family pays taxes. A lot of people, every person of color on the coast pays taxes that works and has a job. So, no, we're not telling our children to go anywhere else. Some of these children came here and they were with their family to away from college, and they came to visit family they hadn't seen. Because, you know, everybody has a relative in Mississippi. Every Black person has a relative in Mississippi. So you come here, and then I'm listening to even people of color that say this. They say, oh, they should go somewhere else where they're appreciated. Because no, in 1960, on April 24th, 1960, Dr. Gilbert R. Mason Sr. organized a wait-in that went to the beach, because the beach was, at that time, the beach was not, people of color, Black people, were not allowed on the beach here. They were
right.
not allowed to go on the beach here. It was an offense that could grind you up in jail. So Dr. Gilbert R. Mason Sr., organized a wait-in where 125 women, children, men, students, they went on the beach. They went on the beach in Biloxi here. And it's called Bloody Beach Sunday for a reason, Bloody Beach for a reason, because white people got incensed about that they would dare defile their beach. At the time, before Dr. Mason took them to court over the beach was maintained as it is now by taxes, and it's supposed to be public in that area. But people of color, black people, were not allowed on the beach, and they paid taxes. People that had homes that fronted the beach tried to say that it was their beach. The part that extended into the water was theirs, and therefore they had a right to make it private to just white people. But just like other signs and Walmart and Woolworths and these stores when they said servicing whites only. So that resulted, that day, it turned into a day of violence because the police stood by and allowed angry white mobs to basically assault the protesters on the beach. And that's where it got the name Bloody Beach from. And people don't realize, because one of my mentors is Bishop James Black, and he was on the beach that day. And other mentors and elders of mine that I grew up listening to here, they tell the stories about what happened, because the New York Times covered it, called it one of the bloodiest civil rights actions in Mississippi history. Other papers, national papers, covered it, but they covered what happened on the beach. But I get the stories when you talk to Dr. Gilbert R. Mason Jr., his son, or you talk to Bishop James Black, or you talk to some of these other people, and they tell you what happened that night. They tell you about how these roving bands of white men were attacking black people into the night after that day. There were two deaths that occurred that night, because everyone associates with the action that happened at the beach. But there was fallover, there was spillover, because this is the area, this is what we live in. We live in one of the most openly racist places in the country, and it has always been that way, and it's still that way. So when I talk about spring break and people tell us that we should go somewhere else, after a while we're going to run out of other places to go. And it's just like it comes a time when you must make a stance. And this beach here in Mississippi is christened with the blood of black people. I'm not advocating them going anywhere else. I'm advocating the people of color that live here on the coast, and those who call ourselves our accomplices. We're going to stand up and fight, because it's not the students' job or responsibility to fight for somewhere to go. It's our responsibility to fight for them to have somewhere to go as the residents of this state and as people of color, because you're not going to abuse our children like you did in 1960, and you're going to make them feel comfortable, or we're going to have a reenactment of the incidences that occurred in the civil rights movement from the standpoint of not turning the other cheek, but of a resistance. So that's the story. But see, this is all tied in with Colton Matthews, who is claiming that, I don't know what he's claiming, because I haven't heard an investigation. I mean, anyone talk to him or anything he said. But to hear people talk about this in the terms that he's a disturbed young man, or the music he's listened to is to blame, he's a terrorist. And he's going to be charged with a hate crime. Yeah, that goes without saying. This wasn't an act of love. You burnt the church down. You wasn't burning it down because you loved somebody. And therefore, you wasn't even burning it down for just hate. You were burning it down to cause fear. And one of the key elements associated with a terrorist act is the desire to cause fear. And that's exactly what he called. So guess what he is? He's a terrorist. And then you have people like Candace Owens, who I just can't even begin to wrap my mind around Candace Owens and her support of 45 to the point of speaking before a congressional hearing on white nationalism, and trying to make it seem like white nationalism is not bad. It really doesn't explain that some people confuse nationalism with patriotism, when nationalism is based on a desire for power. And in this country, white nationalism is based upon a desire for white supremacists to have power. The abiding purpose of every nationalist is to secure more power and more prestige for his and white supremacy for them. And that's at the expense, because the only way you can create that kind of power is after the expense of an underclass. So that's not patriotism. That's not something that people of color should even be defending. And when I hear her making these statements in defense of white nationalism, and she said that, you know, because everyone thinks of nationalism, the first thing they think of is Hitler. With good reason. With good reason. Hitler, and she's like, he wasn't a nationalist, he was a psychopath. Yeah, he was a nationalist that was a psychopath, because he was willing to do everything he could to secure power for the superior race as he perceived it. And if that meant destroying others that didn't look like him or didn't fit the ideal mold of what he thought not Germany should represent, he didn't think that just in Germany. He thought that for the world. And so when you defend nationalism, you are in essence making a defense of the racism and white supremacy associated with neo-Nazis. And that in of itself is problematic. But then to be a person of color and do it, and I would call her something else, but we're on a, you know, a family talk show. So I'm just going to call her skin folks. And skin folks for me are people that look like me but are not like me. And that's what she is. She's a skin
folk. Now, you know what? And let me tell you something. Yeah. As I was telling this brother a couple of days ago, when we reacted to one of my posts, that I know black conservatives. I interview black conservatives. And there are a lot of black conservatives that want a lot for black folks in this country, but they just have a different strategy. You know, they just happen to be conservative, but they do have their identity. They know who they are. Not all black conservatives are, how can I say, don't have a self-identity.
I'm black. I'm a black man, first and foremost. I'm not a black liberal.
There are black men that are conservatives that will answer that question the same way. I'm a black man in America. I know what's been going on.
Exactly.
I know there's racism.
Exactly.
I know,
but I'm
going to
tell you
the
difference.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you a difference. Conservatism, what are they conserving? Make America Great Again is a conservative slogan, okay?
Make America Great Again is a cold slogan to make America white again.
Okay.
Make America
conservative. So there is no point in our history that a conservative can point me to and say it was a good time to be black in America. When you're trying to conserve something, what are black conservatives trying to conserve? Because what does the word conserve mean? So when you say I'm a black conservative.
We have financial independence.
No. I said conserve. Conserve is a past tense term. All right?
Mm.
So what are you trying to conserve as a black? What are you trying to conserve? No, you don't get to have it where you say, "Well, I'm for this or making this happen and doing this." No, conserve means to save. So, what are black conservatives trying to save or take us back to?
Hold it now.
Sorry. I keep on hitting this button and whatnot. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I know.
Now,
you're trying to turn
it off.
I feel you.
Never come on.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, teenagers.
Yeah. I think the terminology in itself is misleading, because I don't understand. Number one, I don't like even the identification. I'm not a black liberal either. I'm a realist. I accept that point. But we're fighting for these ideologies that have never in any way, shape, or form benefited us as people of color.
Mm-hmm.
We're fighting for ideologies that are ingrained, instilled, and force-fed to us on a level that we are no better. We're instead of uniting and fighting the oppressor, we're fighting ourselves for ideals the oppressor has instilled upon in us. Be it black feminist movements, black conservatives, a black this, black that, that anything that doesn't involve being a black in spirit or a black person, then you're not fighting the true fight. You're fighting each other. And that each otherism is allowed to one of the, when you read The Art of War by Sun Tzu, or you can even read the modern day interpretation by Robert Greene, divide and conquer. You know, there is no other way that we are such a conquered people still, except that we are being divided from our perceptions of an ideology. Because at the end of the day,
aren't we too large of a group to have the same thought? Though people have come from nowadays, especially nowadays, you know, people come from different experiences that have different thought process. But these different thought processes all got to come to the table and develop a strategy. See, that's the thing. We got all these thought processes with no strategy. What is going to be our strategy to tackle some of these problems, some of these issues? Because just like we have different ideologies, we also have different strategies. But we need some of these strategies need to be going one direction instead of the 10, 15 different directions.
Okay. And I will address this
with
this.
You got some people that are militant. You have people that are Christians, Muslims, liberals, progressives, Republican, Democrat, conservative. You got people from different fashions. We have one thing in common, that we belong to this one race. And we
we have in common that we share because that's a misnomer when we talk about race. As I've gone into that, the social construct of race, there's only one race on the planet of
humans. The human race.
We just come right. When we talk about the social construct of race, that is a social construct. That is not a biological imperative. That is a social construct. Having said that, I understand the ramifications of that created social class that was created for the purpose of white supremacy. I understand that. It's about melanin content and about skin and geographical place of our ancestry. So when you talk about those different labels you just mentioned, those labels are not, you talk about how we want different things. That's fine. I want different things than you want. But I understand that at the end of the day, it's not what I want that is the problem. It is the oppressor that is oppressing us that is the problem. Your differences and my differences are not differences that should lead us to kill each other. They are differences that we can work out on the other side of the revolution. Those, when we allow those differences to keep us from fighting our common enemy, then we're doomed. It's like I saw a meme
yesterday. Next week you have a gentleman that want to talk about that exact topic, revolution. But with the term revolution, there are different revolutions. Boycotting, revolution. War.
No, there's only one revolution.
That's a different revolution.
Those are not revolutions.
Social revolution.
When you
trying
let it
change,
revolutions
are
about.
So what type
change
of revolution are you talking about?
Okay. American
did
revolution.
Try to pick up the gun at one time. And
no, we haven't. Not in the level that we needed to.
Huh?
No, not on the level that we needed to. It doesn't count when a couple of hundred people pick up a gun that are being oppressed. That doesn't matter when you're dealing with a country that has a police force that can handle that. Revolution involves change, and it involves change on a level that is not passive. You know, we're not going to shame anybody into giving up power. We need to get over that. We're not going to shame anybody into giving up power. You can't have a revolution where you're just going right back to the status quo. The status quo in this country is the American Constitution, the United States Constitution. It was founded at a time when people of color had been enslaved for over 160 years still. So on the basis of that, slavery was built a constitution that in never in no part considered us part of the system. So as long as we're rebelling back to the Constitution, when people say, oh, we just follow the Constitution, do that. No, a true revolution in this country is going to encompass overthrowing the present system that we have in place and putting another system in place that truly takes into the account that we are equal in equity, not in equality, but in equity. And this is a difference. Most people talk about, you know, we're fighting for equality. No, I'm fighting for equity. And that means that I am whatever it takes to make your part of society beneficial and non-oppressive to you, that is what we should do. We're not all equal. People don't like to hear me say that, because they're like, oh, but Dr. King said, and you know, we're all born, we're not even all born equal. Some of us are born weighing 17 pounds, some are born weighing 7. Some of us have natural abilities that others don't have. There's all kinds of things that this idea of equality is disproven every day genetically. So when you have that concept that you're all born equal, and that is based upon a misconception anyway, then you, when you build off of that, you're building on a foundation that is already not solid. It is already a delusion. So what we are fighting for is to say that, hey, in this country right now, there is a 13 to 14 times equity gap between people of color and Caucasians. And, you know, we hear about being the Democrats on the campaign trail. Now we hear, well, it's time for us to hear a lot about reparations, right? Different means to talk about reparations to make it seem like they understand the black experience, even when they're skin folks. And they want to reach out to us now because they want our vote. And they want to talk about reparations. Every 4 years this happens. Every election, in some way, shape, or form, reparations comes up. And some candidate has got this great plan to give black people in America reparations for 400 years of suffering. It's not possible, for one. Let me address that for one. Reparations, true reparations are not possible, because true reparations would involve putting a price tag on the suffering of my ancestors. True reparations would involve me putting a price tag of physicality on a system that thought my ancestors were nothing more than property anyway. So I have to, in my mind, say, what was my grandfather's suffering worth for me today? You can't give me enough money. You can't do that. So reparations already is based upon a fallacy that people don't understand. That, and to do this, to talk about reparations in the form of just giving me a check, it's not going to do anything to change the fact that there's still a 13-time wealth gap in this country unless we build opportunity. So when you talk about this and you talk about it in that vein, and you get people saying that, you know, we need reparations and we're going to give you reparations and I'm going to put $100 million aside and we're going to spread this out over 10 years and we're going to do this and do that. No, that's just ideology, because every day that ideology meets the reality of the fact that it's not going to happen. So if you really want to develop a plan to reparate people of color in this country, because reparate, when people realize that to reparate is to make amends for a wrong one has gone through by paying money to or otherwise helping those who have been wronged, first step we must take is to admit we were wronged. And most people in this country, when they talk about racism, especially white people, when white people talk about racism, that's the first thing they don't want to do. They want to talk about, I'm not responsible for the actions of my great-great-great-grandpappy. Yeah, you're still benefiting from the actions of your great-great-great-grandpappy. So they don't want to talk about that. They don't want to talk about the wrong that was done. Until we talk about that wrong that was done, we have no way to get reconciliation either. Reparations is a pipe dream. It's not going to happen. in the manner that anybody's going to be accepting of. It's not going to happen. And what it does do, though, is undermine the suffering of those who have come before us. What it does do is undermine what we are going through today, because what's going to happen? The first time we get a check for $1,000 a month for 12 months and $12,000 a year, then people that are still racist are going to be able to say, hey, we don't need to hear about slavery anymore because we paid for that. We're paying for that for you to be right off right.
Hold it now.
And that's not true. Malcolm said, you can't stick a knife 9 inches in my back and pull it out three inches and call that progress. You know, that's what you're doing. The knife is still in our back. First, let's remove the knife of racism and then start the healing process of reconciliation. And until we do that, nothing along the lines of reparations are going to work. And you do that by overturning, this is how I want my reparations. I want to overturn the systems of institutional racism and systemic racism that exist in this country and start fresh. Let's try that.
You're not going to do that.
Exactly. We're not going to get reparations either.
The Constitution wasn't meant for us. The Constitution was meant
for why I never mentioned
it. I never mentioned reparations.
Right. That's why I never talk about conciliation involving the Constitution of the United States. Reconciliation involves the turning over of the Constitution of the United States. Reparations involves a system in which we as people of color are able to acquire and hold on to the labor that has made this country into what it is by our blood, sweat, and tears. And that doesn't come by just giving me a check for a couple of thousand dollars. No, that doesn't. That comes by, if you're going to just give me a check and leave the same institutions in place that have systemically and institutionally discriminated and been racist in their approach, then you're not giving me anything. Just giving me more money to give to the system. You're not giving me anything. The matrix just resets to the same matrix. And as long as we keep aspiring towards that, that's what we're going to get. That's what we're going to get. Reparations is a pipe dream, and it's something that's used to appease people and get them to vote for white politicians that mention it, and then they forget for 4 more years, and then it comes up again. No, it's a pipe dream. It's a pipe dream we need to stop buying into, because in the long run, it does not help us. It does not help us talking about reparations. It only helps us when we get to the point where, remember, reparations is not about a $12,000 check, because then you're no better than selling you might as well join slave masters who are slavers that sold slaves in America. So you're just selling your ancestors for a couple of thousand dollars. That's the same thing. So, no, when we talk about reparations, if we're not talking about overturning the systems that are in place that systematically and institutionally discriminate against people of color, then we're not talking about benefits at all. We're just talking about numbers and money of the capitalistic system that has basically been built on the backs of people of color in this country, and black people especially, since we came to this country. You get to the – and just segueing into what I wanted to mention before we close about the policies. Last year, the Trump administration instituted the zero-tolerance policy at the southern border. And, you know, children were separated from their families. Children that have some children, thousands of children, who the government lost track of. And they have not been reunited with their families. Families, mothers and fathers have been deported, and they don't know where their children are.
You know, like last week, you know, this month is called National Child Prevention or Child Abuse Month. And that's all like child abuse. The child away from the family for no cause. Like, what they gonna do with these children? Are these children still living?
We don't know, because like I say, the government doesn't even know where these children are.
Go ahead.
It's worse than an individual case of child abuse. This is state-sponsored and controlled child abuse and neglect. It's also the neglect and the abuse of families in general. This whole showing the disregard we have for the family union of people of color that has also nothing new also. Because going back to 1619, okay, I gotta tell you, I saw it every. I'm saying it every show this year. This is 19. This is 2019, and we are 400 years removed from the first 20 Africans that landed in Jamestown, Virginia, on the White Line and were sold into slavery to repair their boat. So we're 400 years from that event. Slavery was also going on in other places because the Europeans that landed in Africa and started. But I'm talking about in this.
We were here before slavery. Go ahead. That's another show.
Yeah, that's another show. So you get this point where we have this 400-year history, and our families have were separated then. And I made a post. I was making a post about it on Facebook that the policy of separating children at the border is racist today, and it was racist 400 years ago. It's the same policy. I don't know where these children are, and the government can't tell you where these children are. So if I say they're a white being sold into sex trade, you can't deny that because you can't tell me where they are. So this is state-sponsored child abuse and neglect. This is state-sponsored criminal activity against a child. The Catholic Church, everyone wants to drag them at the present time, and then the former Pope made the statement earlier this week, the end of last week, that they blame the 1960s sexual revolution and the liberal attitudes about sex for the sex abuse scandal that is presently plaguing the Catholic Church. I said, really? So this is just another act if you don't even want to have white men accept responsibility for their perverted behavior and the molestation of children.
Mm-hmm.
So this is your justification for that. So we have a state, the United States, that is engaged in a policy that has led to the endangerment of children, and nobody wants to address that as a crime against humanity. We have a president that is seriously contemplating, even after this debacle of happened last year with separation of families, now we want to talk about this option where they're going to ask families if they want to have their children in detention with them or if they want to have their children separated from them somewhere else until they get out of detention. Who thinks that is a humane choice to give a parent? Who thinks that? Who
right.
thinks that that is a humane choice to give a parent? That you are asking a parent if it is acceptable if I take your child and put them somewhere that I might lose them, or I put your child behind bars. To even think that that is an acceptable alternative to just separating children from families is horrendous in and of itself, and it shouldn't be tolerated. But we have gotten in this point in this country where the present administration has really just opened the floodgate of horror onto us in a way that we are normalizing some of these horrors. And also in a way that people are talking about the Mueller report. You understand, too, when the Mueller report started, I said over and over that this is not going to lead to the impeachment of 45.
Right.
This is not. It's not. It might lead to more questions and all this, but it's not going to lead to an impeachment. And sure enough, when the Mueller report comes out and I have people, they switch their tune once the president wasn't indicted or no subpoenas or articles of impeachment started. And you know what they started talking about? Well, 2020. We're going to address this in 2020. Let me tell you all something. And
you're
going to
get another 4 years.
Yeah, let me tell you something. 45 is a symptom of the problem that is this country, that is wrong in this country. A symptom. And getting rid of 45 in two more years in 2020 is not going to address the symptom, meaning the disease of racism and oppression that exists in the country. It flared up because of the presidency of Barack Obama. Don't get me wrong, I had issues with some of the things he did as president. But that was an incendiary move against the backlash that you see now. This 37 to 40% of Trump's base, I can't believe I even said his name, of 45's base that always supports whatever horror he does. these people are not new. They have been here. They have been here, and they have gone underground and now they're above ground. And you, what we should take this time to do is identify these people, to identify them. When we see these videos online of white people using the N-word openly, again, towards in a derogatory term towards people of color, black people. When you see not blackface from just 1984, but you see blackface in these kids posting videos using the N-word or, you know, going on rants in blackface, thinking it's funny.
The N-word is accepted now. Haven't you heard? It's okay to call everybody
the N-word. That's another conversation for me when I talk about why people of color, why I as a black man can use the N-word and a white man can't. That's a whole other conversation because it's still intent. And it also has to do with the fact that you all, white people, lost the right to say this word. And, it, you know, I heard this person tell my nephew one day that when he used it, a white man, white child, I should say, and he was talking about, oh, it's in the songs. I just use it with the A on the end. And, you know, can you, that was still got you knocked out.
Yeah, oh, that's a new one.
Instance,
oh, he did say the A word. It's a different one. It got an A on the end.
Yeah,
that's real.
No. Just like Kendrick Lamar concert. And I'm like, you shouldn't have brought her up there. But anyway, she should have had enough sense to know, this is not, you don't rap the part of that song. But see, white people have a trouble wrapping their mind around being told they can't do something or they shouldn't do something. That's part of that white privilege that they have. They can't wrap their minds around the idealism that this is not something that you should do or it's off limits to you. Because the minute you tell them it's off limits, that's exactly what they think about and want to do, because that's part of white supremacy and it's twin white privilege. So that's the state of our union. I'm going to call that the state of the union tonight. So we got about 3 minutes. I need to wrap it up.
But T Naked, I really, if you can, the last Tuesday of the month, if you could call in the last Tuesday of this month, because I have a Republican on, a white Republican on, first white
the
guest. 30th. The last Tuesday, not next Tuesday, but the last
the
Tuesday after that.
Yeah, but that's the
30th. If you could call in, man. Because I know he's going to come out
time?
With crazy stuff about, what you call him, 45.
So that has proved interesting. I might have to travel to Atlanta after that. But, Kenny, you stay healthy. Keep me informed about what's going on with you. Wishing you all the best, brother, health-wise. And like I say, if you need us, call. Let us know. If you need me to take over your show for you, I'll be glad to do that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be
glad to do that. Man, I got you on air. I got you on tape, baby.
You got to figure out a way, though, to transfer control of it to here so I can do it from here. That's the caveat.
You got to do is just a scroll. That's all it is, just a thumb scroll. And know the codes and everything. That's all that is.
We'll work on
that.
We'll work on that.
I'm not finished yet. I'm still in the fight.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to let you. All right,
T-Nation. Hey, I see
you
next month, man. Hey,
all
check
right,
this
brother.
Out.
Now you're talking to you.
Yeah, make sure you call in at the last Tuesday of the month, man.
All right, brother. All right. You have a nice one. All peace, right. Everybody.
Peace, man.
Hold it now.